Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. So welcome back. It's time for this month's Head to Head podcast, and I hope that the sun is still shining wherever you are listening to this episode. Today, I'm really delighted to be joined by two guests, both on Focus Trust, Anna Hackett and Sally Scott. Hello, both of you. Welcome along to this session. How are you both?
Hi there.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good, good. And are you looking forward to this session? And it's lovely to see you both. And it's been a while, actually, since I've kind of seen you face to face. And I'm delighted, really, to have a bit of a double bubble today. Two guests to talk through an improvement journey that you've been looking at across your trust. So a trust-wide development journey that's kind of placed the spotlight on child development and assessment. And I think it's going to be really interesting today to kind of hear the conversation, because we'll be hearing about the kind of development journey and the impact of it from two very different perspectives, because it would be fair to say you both wear different hats in terms of the jobs that you do. So that's probably a good place to start. If I can kind of hand over, we'll go to Anna first and then come to you, Sally, but just kind of hand over to you to tell us a bit about your background and your role and kind of your interests and those sorts of things, just so we can get a bit of a feel for each of you. So over to you, Anna.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I wear multiple hats, I guess. Many years ago, I was thinking about this. It's 16 years that I've been in education, in a teaching sort of form. And then before that, my start and my passion for almost like what we do, I was working with children in high school as what was called an SEND support assistant for 2 years. So I did that before I trained to be a teacher. So I guess that work has like formed some of the really like strong values that I have around meeting children where they are, the importance of giving every child a voice. So yeah, that was where I sort of started. And then obviously when I'm trained primary teacher, English lead. English is a massive passion of mine. So I was an English leader for a number of years, curriculum leader, worked as, I think I was one of those people, I think there's a few people that say this, that you never intend to be a leader. You never intend to be on SLT. But then I think that my passion and my like drive for doing what was right for what was in the classroom and for supporting others, that's almost driven me to where I am. So progressed then to assistant head, senior leadership, and then I think this role came up. So my fancy title is Curriculum and Professional Learning Lead, which sounds wonderful. But I think what sits underneath that is I feel like I'm almost that bridge with our schools. So again, externally, some of the key messages that come out, but also some of the things that people are grappling with. So around whether it's curriculum, whether it's their pedagogy, those sort of things. So I lead on various areas, but it is an absolute privilege to work with all 15 of our schools. Very, very lucky. And meet some wonderful people like Sally.
Oh, there you go, Sally. That's teed up for you. Thank you so much, Anna. So over to you, Sally.
Thank you, Anna. So, yeah, I've been a teacher for 22 years now, and spent most of my time in Calderdale and now in Bradford, at Shipden Head in Queensbury. And I was actually, when you had to choose a key stage to specialise in, I was key stage two, a maths specialist. The irony now being that I'm now the early years lead, where I am now an assistant head and phonics and early reading lead. So I really have switched. It was one of those moments in my first school where we had an early years lead who'd been at the school for a number of years. She was fantastic, but she retired. And the question was, who's going to go to early years? Sally, are you going? Would you like to go? You know, I'll be honest, it never entered my head. I was a Key Stage 2, maths through and through. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll go do it. And I haven't looked back, really. I haven't been back to Key Stage 2 since. So I've spent my time in early years, year one, year two, predominantly, over the last few years. And then Shibden early years lead there.
Fantastic. Oh, you see, I'm a big believer that everybody should teach in the early years at some point, regardless of where you kind of really want to be. You know, some people do really want to be in a specific key stage or a specific class, but I do a specific year group. But I do think teaching in the early years gives you a very different perspective, no matter where you then kind of continue your journey. So interesting to hear. Great. So that's good just to hear. Obviously, like I say, two very different hats, but I do know that you work together from an early years point of view, but obviously from the literacy point of view. And as a trust, there's lots of kind of collaboration. That's one of the things that the trust is particularly passionate about, I know, and Anna yourself. There are lots and lots of collaboration. So before we dig into the actual kind of improvement journey that you've been on over the last 12 to 18 months, it'd be good just to get a little bit more insight about obviously Focus Trust itself in terms of vision and values, how many settings and those sorts of things. And then again, we'll hear about your school context as well after that, if that's okay, Sally. So, yeah. So tell us a little bit about Focus, first of all, Anna.
So Focus Trust, very, very proud to work as part of Focus Trust and to represent them, on this occasion. Before I get into the details, I think one key thing is that I always say it's not the trust, it's our trust. And that's something that I'm really passionate about pushing forward, because we've all got a voice within here and we can all make a change. So, within our trust, we've got 15 schools, so they are beautifully unique, all individual, and rightly so. We span across 7 local authorities. So, again, the time that sometimes I spend in my car, I listen to podcasts, obviously, like this one, and do a lot of thinking. So I have a lot of like thinking time. It's across 7 local authorities, which again brings its challenges, but also its rewards. Our trust was formed in 2013. So, and I think that what's really, really key is the relationships that we have with our schools. We're a very small central team. So there's myself and our education director and our safeguarding ambition and inclusion lead. He's got a fancy title as well. We form the education side of our central team. So we're very much based on the principles of working with our schools. And I think that, again, our vision is to have those great schools at the heart of our communities. So it can't be a one-size-fits-all approach for us, because each community is different, is unique. And our mission to do that is learning together and making the difference. And I think that's something that I've almost hooked onto a lot through the professional learning side of my role, because again, doing this together, Sally, again, our experiences of implementing some of the developments that we've made this past year, doing it alongside leaders like Sally, just means that it's so much richer. So that very much that learning together, making the difference is key. So one of our schools is within Winshibden, and lucky enough that Sally's here to share her insight from the Shibden side of things, but that will be different to another school and a school in Oldham, for example. So yeah, very varied in where we are as a trust, but very proud.
And as you say, I think that does bring some real richness, but I suppose in some respects as well. It's great to hear that you're still kind of keeping the unique school at the centre of everything you do, and they are all unique. But in terms of driving then trust-wide developments, you know, that is something that probably takes a lot of thought and a lot of care and some unpickings as well. So again, it will be good to kind of think about that as we're moving through the session. Okay, so Sally, tell us a little bit about Shibden in terms of context, number of children, you know, pupil premium, those sorts of things. Just give us a little bit of a flavour.
Yeah. Okay, so Shipton Head Primary Academy sits on the border of Bradford, so just on the outskirts of Bradford and on the Bradford-Halifax border in West Yorkshire. We are a two-form entry school all the way through from reception up to year six. We have 402 pupils on roll at the moment, currently. So quite a large primary school, really. The largest one within the Queensbury Village as well. We actually sit, so Shipton Head is actually sat at the top of the Shipton Valley. So we're quite blessed that we're on this outskirts of Bradford, but we're blessed with beautiful views of fields and the valley. And people may have heard of Shipton when if anybody who's watched Gentleman Jack may have heard that Annalisa lived at Shipton Hall, which is situated at the bottom of the valley. So we are at the head of the valley up on the top. So we're really high up. You can guarantee that if there is sun everywhere else in West Yorkshire, it's most likely snowing in Queensbury, and that's where the fog will be. So we have very interesting weather, which makes our outdoor play very entertaining. We have lower than average pupil premium numbers and relatively low EAL as well, you know, compared to local schools. We don't have a nursery at the moment, and we are full for September, which is fantastic news. 60 children coming in, and we take from a wide range and a wide number of nurseries this year. We're taking from 20 different nurseries, which obviously has an impact then when you're thinking about transition, you know, and making that process really work for the families and getting to know our children and families so we can hit the ground running as soon as children come in. And of course, the importance of a really good baseline. We have many parents who work. We offer wraparound care for our families. So a lot of our children make use of our wraparound care, and our children have some fantastic experiences. They come to us with some fantastic life experiences already on which we can build on when they come into us in reception.
Yeah. And it's interesting though to hear, for example, this year coming, you're going to be taking from 20 different settings. So even within that, there will be variance, won't there, in terms of how much, you know, hours attended, part-time, full-time, and again, those experiences. So getting the transition right is key, but also, as you kind of alluded to, getting a really strong understanding of the children's start points so that you can really support them to springboard into your school curriculum, I think is kind of crucial. Yeah. So. Okay, thank you for that. Thanks for kind of just sharing that, just to give a bit of context for the listeners, really, in terms of where you are and what you're doing and the size of your trust and those sorts of things. So for the last, I think it would be fair to say, last 12 to 18 months or so, I was going to say 18 because I feel like some of this would have been in the central team's mind before it was kind of introduced to kind of schools within the trust. But you were thinking about focusing on child development and assessment over that time period, and it's been a journey that you've been on. So Anna, from your point of view, can you just set the scene as to where that came from and why you were as a trust, why your trust were thinking of the need to focus on that and how it came about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess what's worth saying is that I started this role just about 2.5 years ago, which seems to have flown by. But I think that when I first started, what was really important was establishing those relationships with each of our schools and getting a flavour of some of the challenges and some of the strengths that were there. And I think that in terms of, you know, Sally's obviously given us the context of Shipton, but some of our other schools, they have varying contexts. So we've got some schools that are well above average in terms of pupil premium, in terms of EAL. So each of the starting points of each of our schools vary considerably. So in terms of how we sort of started to develop our trust-wide focus on child development, it was from I remember it quite clearly, an early years leaders forum when I first started. So I lead on the English and maths, the curriculum and the early years leaders forums currently. And it was, again, something that I wanted to almost open up to them as early years leaders. Where are we? What would you like if I had a magic wand and I could wave it? What would you want? And they were very, very honest about a number of things. And as you know, early as leaders, I've absolutely loved them. And I had to be almost vulnerable myself because I've not been an early years leader. So for me to facilitate support and professional learning, I really had to listen and properly listen and then go away and understand and process what these areas were that they were talking about and see that when they were saying that this was a challenge, actually take that and think, right, okay, what can I do then? How can we move forward as a trust to resolve some of these things? So it was a beautiful, passionate, lively forum. I think I did bring cake, which was always goes down well.
And it always brings cake.
and I think some of the things that almost as a group of schools, our leaders wanted to work on were things like moderation, sharing effective practice, things that were really tangible. But what we'd almost hit on was the fact that our assessments, our baseline, our understanding of how children develop, that varied quite considerably. And we'd done some work with Emma Turner previously around curriculum and thinking about the curriculum and how we ensure that our children access the curriculum. But what I could almost see was, again, early years had become almost this like island by itself, not intentional on anybody's part at all. But it was almost like, if you were in early years, you knew it and you were passionate about it and you felt strongly about it. And if you weren't, you knew it was important, but it was almost like, do I question it? Do I explore it? Or do I just know it's over there? So it was a lot of that work around, actually, we really need to jump in with both feet, be courageous, be curious and find out, because our early years leaders were facing some, you know, increasing challenges. I think everybody is talking about school readiness. Everybody is talking about meeting need. But actually for me, it's, well, what is that need? We say that we are learning together to make the difference. But what is the difference that we want to make? And to me, that comes back to meaningful assessment. Yeah. So I can almost like asked everybody to share their assessments with us. And again, we saw that there was variability within that. So that was in my mind, is actually we need to develop a strategy. And then I guess the other thing was around the sort of government messages around, improving the best start in life for our children. But I think for me, it was, right, okay, so how are we going to tangibly support our schools to do that and to get everybody involved? So that's where, in terms of that focus and that spotlight, that's kind of where it came from. And then it's just flourished from there.
Just like that, there's a huge amount of work that's gone behind the scenes for it to just flourish from there. That kind of cuts the podcast straight up there. There we go. We had a wonderful time. But yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it, to hear you talking about early years and actually, if you're living and breathing it, that school readiness or not, and the children that you're receiving is a very big, it's lived and breathed, and you don't always know the children that you're getting and the experiences that they've had. And sometimes what you're expecting is different. But I think also because of the number of schools, whilst they are each unique, there's still an importance to have that kind of shared understanding and that common language of what we're saying when we're kind of saying, well, our children come in below. But below what? So is your below the same as that below? And I think from a common language point of view, that's important, and that common understanding. But I suppose from a trust-wide perspective as well, it's important that it's all kind of comparative, if that makes sense, and that you can pull a true picture together, not just for the individual schools, but kind of looking at that as a whole. And it's really meaty stuff, isn't it? It's really meaty things to get stuck into, and big, I guess, as well, things start to, it's like pulling a thread, and then things start to kind of, more things come to light, or more things, I'm not going to say unravel, but certainly more things come to light in terms of raising questions. And I think that's something, again, that I know your trust is really keen to do. You really look to kind of raise questions and challenge thinking, and not in a critical way, but actually in a constructive professional discussion, professional development point of view, to really engage in discussions. And I know as you started the journey, obviously you had that forum, but there were many more kind of onward meetings, sessions, discussions, reflections, and that sharing reflections together, part of that collaborative nature. And I think actually there were some interesting questions that I think you raise really around send versus disadvantage. Is it one or is it the other, or is it a bit of both, and those sorts of things. So can you tell us a little bit more about some of those things that were raised again from those conversations?
Yeah, and I guess that's where we must look into that research, and I'm very much research informed. I like to think and look at things, and then we make decisions based on that. So our Safeguard and Ambition Inclusion lead, he and I had spent quite a lot of time looking at Mark Rowland's work around addressing disadvantage and the idea of labels, and actually how labeling children doesn't really help anybody. It's actually that we need to have a really clear understanding of where that child is at, and either the barriers or the strengths that they have when they come to us. So I think there was a number of conversations around, we've got children who are starting with us, there is high SEND need. And so again, to be curious and to think, well, is it SEND need? Or is it actually that there has been, for whatever reason, an absence of a certain part of their developmental journey? And because that then means that perhaps we can then adapt provision, we can adapt the way that we interact with the children. So I think that, again, it was almost slowing that thinking down to actually think, hang on a minute, is it that it's SEND, or actually is it that we need to provide something slightly different? For whatever reason, there's a gap there in their developmental journey. And I think that what we noticed was we were almost using like catch-alls, and that wasn't informing our practice necessarily. So to really drill down into sort of addressing some of those sort of misconceptions that we've had throughout education. And I think that to me was when we looked at the work with Mark Rowland, but also people like Alistair Bryce Clegg, and really drilling down into sort of that understanding of child development. And again, why child development is important for us all to be aware of. It's not just something that sits with early years. And I think that making that distinction between, do we mean early years or do we mean child development? Because actually, if we can have an understanding of child development, we can then think, right, well, how are we supporting our children in their developmental journey to build those strong foundations? To build the strong foundations in foundational knowledge, in foundational skills. So I think that slowing the thinking down really made that, made us look at our assessments. And that's when, again, we came to look at early excellence and the work that almost you were doing around that meaningful assessment. So I remember seeing an email that was sharing information about XREC and thinking, aha, this is it. This is what we need. So yeah, I think that's where we'd almost like started on our journey.
Yeah. And I think you can hear just hearing you talk, you can hear that curiosity all of the time in terms of, it's almost like a professional pushback. Something's presented and we don't take it as a face value necessarily or a fait accompli. Actually, there's a professional pushback and curiosity about the why behind things, and what you're kind of getting to, what you're drilling down into is which children need what and why they need that. And as you say, some of that will be a gap in experience or a gap in an opportunity that's going to support them with their development. And it's not necessarily something that is going to be a long-term challenge for those children, but with the right support in the right way, presented well, actually can help to almost close some of those gaps. And it's recognising the priorities. If the children have got, you know, several kind of gaps, it's recognising which ones are the priority, which ones are going to make the difference in that kind of well-rounded and that, the foundational knowledge and those sorts of things that you're talking about. So, Sally, for you, kind of on the ground, literally with real children joining you, anything from those conversations that really resonated with you around that kind of curious thinking and digging deeper?
I think for us, you know, when our children come into us in September, obviously we complete the RBA baseline, but I feel as though that really core understanding of child development has really helped us to just look at things differently alongside the extract baseline, hand in hand with that. I think for us as a school, it's allowed, as Anna said, it's allowed everyone in school to understand child development rather than it just being child development ends at the end of EYFS and then we all go on to the national curriculum and it's done and dusted. And I'm not saying that's how everyone thought or felt, but I think there was kind of that perception around it. I think people at our school would quite openly say that they now have a much deeper understanding of child development. So I think a strong example of how that's worked in our school is following one of our CLD days, we really focused in on handwriting, but not just pencil grip. We started right at the beginning around how children develop their core muscles as, you know, as babies, as toddlers, the importance of those gross motor skills, which we talk about all the time in EYFS, don't we? But not necessarily throughout the rest of school. And then understanding the vestibular and the proprioceptive systems. We went through all that. And as a result of that, we've changed our practice in handwriting. So we start our handwriting sessions with a gross motor skills session before we carry on with our actual sort of more formal learning of handwriting. We're tracking more closely how children's pencil grip is developing, and people have a better understanding now that, you know, we're not going to have a beautiful tripod grip at the end of EYFS. That would be lovely, obviously. But for some children, that's not where they're at. That's not their age and stage. And it's, you know, it's up to us as a school to continue to monitor that development, to give children the right tools, to make sure we're assessing and that we're carrying on monitoring that so that we can get the best outcomes for our children. So that's just one example, really.
Yeah. I think it just listening to you both speak, it begins to what you can still start to see quite clearly is that child development and understanding child development is quite far reaching. It's far reaching in terms of for the staff working with those children to help them understand what they're seeing and what's happening right in front of them and unpick where those children are and perhaps where they've come from and where they've got to go to. It helps them to make informed judgments about kind of where the children are at a point in time if they're doing assessment. But I also think it's far reaching into the curriculum and provision and teaching and learning and the opportunities that you're providing. And I think it's so right that actually it's not just about early years. And I know when we deliver training, and if we're fortunate enough to have the whole school engage with us, even if we're talking early years, actually when you start talking about children and child development and the primaries of learning being time sensitive and the things that make a difference for the children in the here and now, but also their onward journey, you can see particularly for Key Stage 2 colleagues, there's kind of lots of kind of dots joining up in their mind of, I've got a child in my class that does this. And it's probably because they didn't have this or they need more of that. And I think it helps us all to kind of see, and I've already used the phrase, but what the children need next, you know, where those gaps are and the right steps of that journey. Because what you don't ever want to leave is kind of something hanging, not filled, as it were, in terms of a gap. So I think hearing you talk about child development is really key to see that bigger picture for sure.
Yeah, and I think that like the having that as almost the rationale, the why behind this is why we're doing it. So not just the assessment and the, you know, our extract beyond baseline, they've been invaluable in sort of capturing that. But having that rationale of child development has really made space for this to happen and given almost a bit of permission to our early years leaders, to our year one teachers. And from a system leadership point of view, I guess, you know, across 15 schools, we're really encouraging our principals to spend time thinking about early years and thinking about the importance of that. So I think that on multiple levels, it's almost reframing what everyone would have valued, you know, in the first instance. We all do this job because we care and we want the very best for our children. But I think that opening up that meaningful assessment and opening up that understanding of child development, and we're not there yet. We're not all fully there yet, but opening that up as a curiosity, that's meant that we're creating more space for it. We value it more. And I'm able to, you know, in the position that I hold, I'm able to go to our trust board and talk about, actually, this is the work that we're doing. We're investing in early years. We're investing in child development. Our staff's professional learning stems from this. We are doing our very best to provide great starting points for our children. And as we talked earlier, our starting points vary considerably. So we really do need to invest in it. And that, to me, that's something that, again, I feel really passionately about, that we're able to bring that message across our trust to all groups of people. Governors Forum, when we do a Governors Forum, I'm given a slot where I'm able to share what we're doing. So governors are aware. Again, our leaders forums are where our principals and our head teachers attend. I have a 45 minute hour slot where I can explore these messages as well. So that, to me, is what we're about as a trust. We're about connecting on what matters. And I can see that we're building as we fly. Absolutely. Yeah. That is what it feels like. I've used that phrase quite a lot this year. We're building as we fly, but it's co-construction. We're doing it together, and relationships with our early years leaders and our senior leaders, they tell us, they'll say, actually, Anna, this isn't quite working, or we're not too sure about this. I know we did that when we had the baseline. So we'd done the X-ray baseline, and then feedback that I'd taken was, right, okay, we need a bit more input on this. We need some guidance. So I was on the phone straight away, or on the email straight away, to yourself, say, to almost like ask for, and we did a development day with our earliest leaders. So again, it's very much we're being responsive around what matters. With your wonderful support.
I think what's really refreshing to hear is that connection through, and that there is a real kind of tangible connection between what principals and heads and maybe people higher up in your trust are thinking, doing, discussing, considering, as well as what's happening on the ground with your very youngest children across all of the schools in your trust. And I think it's interesting to hear that actually your principals and heads, I know, are kind of much more informed because of the work that you're doing, but because of that collaborative kind of CPG journey together, they're also asking more of the right questions and looking at more of the right things in terms of what the, if you like, the crude data is telling them, and really looking at are we kind of putting the right things in place, are we prioritizing the right things. And that's very much the so what of assessment, isn't it? We've talked about the importance of child development, but all too often when I talk with schools about assessment, it's like, oh yeah, I've done my data drop. And that's not why we assess. We're assessing to understand where we are and what next, and the so what of it, isn't it? And some of that so what is for individual children, some of that is for a group or a class or a cohort. And I think the work that you're talking about, and I know, you know, with the tools that you're using, the X-Rec suite of tools, it gives you both that kind of very granular child level, but also that kind of big picture. So it will be pulling those two things together. So I guess in terms of your journey then, we've talked about forums, we've we've talked about kind of professional learning days. You've talked about having groups and engaging in that. Obviously, one of the things that helps you kind of along your journey is investing in the XREC tool, which is the what you did originally, the baseline tool. But what other things have you kind of engaged in as part of your journey in terms of rolling things out, having the discussions? Is there anything else that you can kind of add to that journey in terms of what you've been doing?
So I guess in terms of strengthening our strategy, what we've had is we've again reached out to various expertise. We've used our, as you said, we've used our forums. So not just our early years forum, but through our English Leaders Forum, Maths Leaders Forum, Curriculum Leaders Forum, everybody's had that opportunity to sort of explore these assessment materials and then think about the so what. So our Maths Leaders Forum, for example, our Maths Leaders, again, if we did a confidence test of how confident they felt about early years, it was, you know, there was room for improvement, absolutely, was. So my question was, well, okay, so when you go and you look around early years and you support your early years teams, what are you looking for? Or is that something that actually we could develop further? So what we did was we took the data, that data set from XREC. We looked at the things that we were seeing, particularly around maths, particularly bringing in characteristics of effective learning, because I think that's something that has massively changed almost the way that we think about early years, and the fact that we're assessing characteristics of effective learning. That to me is something that has started to unlock a lot of our work around pedagogy and our work around curriculum. And I can see that building in the future. So for our maths leaders to be able to interpret what they were seeing in an earlier setting. So we worked on co-construction, a bit of a monitoring prompt, and then we dove into early years. We went and we did a walk around in early years to again be curious with what we saw. Mm-hmm. And again, that kind of brought that understanding to life for our early years leaders. So it wasn't that they were just over in construction playing with bricks. It was actually, you know, there was problem solving in there. There was risk taking. And all of those aspects build into the mathematicians that we want to leave our schools. So I think that was a key sort of strategic line that we went down. What is the role that we're supporting? So maths leaders, and how can I almost best support them to interpret child development, interpret the assessment materials? And then I guess one of the other sort of key elements of implementing this work has been the work that we've done with yourselves, Early Excellence. And I think that having someone that I can almost, that's on the end of an email to say, Sarah, I'm not 100% sure about this. What do you think? That's been huge. But then also the way that we've been able to co-construct some of the training. So I know that the last training that we did was our Early Years Leaders Forum, as I mentioned earlier, but we were able to have a pre-meet. So you, me, and then some other Early Years leaders. And that to me, again, is crucial to professional learning, that having that insight from the people on the ground, on the shop floor, makes all the difference. We've got a date booked in July, which I'm very excited for, around the transition to year one tool. So we've asked for all our year one teachers to come along to some training with yourself. So we're meeting soon to go through what that day will look like, so that we know that actually in September, our year one teachers are really, really informed in terms of the assessment and where they go next. And that's mm-hmm. been so popular that we're having to find a bigger space because some of our senior leaders want to come to it as well. So
jolly good. And I think that's the thing from our point of view, obviously, when we were developing the X-ray tools, for the listeners who don't know very much about it, it's a suite of three for use in the reception year, but it's very much underpinned by what we know about principled assessment, what we know about effective practice in the early years, what we know about that transition to year one and bridging that gap between the YFS curriculum and into the year one curriculum as well. So I think each tool, the baseline gives a clear baseline start points. The mid-year gives that clear which children should we be worrying about that we're going to really focus on to ensure that they are as well placed as possible by the end of the year. And then that supported transition to year one really is end of EYFS. And then, as you say, into year one, actually there's some real scope there for upskilling the receiving team. And of course, woven through all of those is kind of leaders and such like. And I think what makes it unique, and you will have experienced this, is the fact that there is a focus on the characteristics of effective learning. Yes, wellbeing and involvement, which schools sometimes do already look at, some do, some don't, but those characteristics of effective learning, but also that the X-REC tool gives you developmental information. Are the children developmentally where they need to be? And yes, there's scope to say, are they against the line in the sand? But that developmental picture, I think, has been really powerful to really complement the work that you've been doing with child development. And I know more widely than just yourselves as Focus Trust, other schools and trusts that are using the tool have really found that developmental lens, particularly around the summer borns and the autumn borns, particularly really, really powerful in informing practice. And it's funny, I don't know whether listeners can see or not, but actually probably not, but Sally's nodding. So I was going to say, Sally, tell us about your experiences actually having been on the ground with real children, having had that CPD and the big discussions around child development and the work that Anna and the team have been doing around strengthening that, but with the assessment tool kind of dropping into it, I suppose, for want of a better description. But it isn't two separate things. They really well interconnect, don't they? But how's it been for you on the ground? What a difference has it made to you in terms of teaching and learning and for your children as well?
Yeah, I think for us, I think it really has made a big difference. You know, as I mentioned earlier, when you're taking children from as many as 20 different settings, obviously, you know, it's not new to carry out a baseline of your children, is it? But I think for us, when we've reflected and spoken as a team at school and with SLT, and then when I've spoken with Anna and other early years leads as well at our forums, I think it's that real focus, not only on the characteristics of effective learning, which is exactly what I was going to say as well, but even on that step before that around the Leuven scales and around children's wellbeing and involvement. You know, we have a lot of children who are coming from a setting where they don't know anyone quite, you know, and it's the same for the cohort that I'm about to take in this year. There are many, many of the children who are coming on their own, and we do nursery visits, we do home visits, we do stay and play with the families. So obviously we are gathering information from the people who know those children best, and you know, the parents obviously play a massive part in that. But then obviously, as you said, when the children actually come into you, you take all that information on board. It's starting at that very, very beginning, isn't it? That we need our children to be happy, we need them to be settled, and we need them to be engaged and involved in what we're doing. And is that what we're seeing, or are there adjustments that we need to make to our learning environment and to our interactions to ensure that before we even start looking at anything else, our prime areas, or whether we can share, whether we can take turns in a conversation, actually are the children, are they happy and are they settled, you know, and what more is it that we can do to build on our transition process as a school to make sure that absolutely happens for them. And I think that before you even get on to the next section, the characteristics of effective learning, I think that for us has been huge.
And as well, in terms of using the tools that kind of you've invested in, the way it's set up means that you're not then rushing to get things done. Actually, you are given the time to be with the children. And Anna used a phrase earlier in a different context, but about creating space to think, slowing things down. And actually, this tool also enables you to do that very practically in the classroom, doesn't it? So that you're not thinking, I've got to get this and this done. Actually, it's about having that time to get to know the children and help to make the best start in those positive relationships and getting to understand the children and those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing you know, just moving slightly further on from what, you know, when we actually have collated that data, I think the being able to look at it from a cohort perspective, but also from an individual child perspective, I think that has really stood out as well. And that might sound ridiculous because of course you look at it as an individual child, but I think just the nature and the way the evidence is collected and the way we've worked as a team, you know, we're a 2-form entry school, but what I failed to mention earlier is that 2 years ago, we knocked a wall down between the two classrooms. We just had an idea one day that we were going to turn it into a unit. So we knocked the wall down and turned it into a unit so that our children had a wide range of opportunities. So we very much work as a team. And I think, obviously, in the rollout of something like this, it's really important that, like we've talked about, that from the top down, everybody understands the point the intent and the purpose of what we're doing. But actually the team, we have a really strong team of 5 that we have in our unit, you know, and making all of them very aware of what it was we were looking for with the children. And then taking that information, looking at that individual child, are they where they should be? And are they where they should be developmentally for their age and stage?
And I think that's the key, isn't it? I think that for lots of users is what's unlocked the moments of, there's some of them, but they're developmentally where they need to be. And actually they haven't got any more capacity right now to go further than that. And at some point they will, but not right now. But interestingly, these autumn borns that we would typically be going, oh yeah, they're okay, actually maybe not developmentally where they need to be. And I know that's unlocked a lot of professional reflection, I think, in terms of the people using the tool, possibly not just in your trust, but kind of more wider than that. Again, I can see you're
absolutely
agreeing.
I'm nodding, but yeah, absolutely. And like I say, you know, when you're talking to your team, when you're looking at that data, or when you're having, you know, weekly meetings with the team and things like that, it has shifted our focus away from children that we might typically have looked at, as you've just mentioned, you know, quite often those autumn born children, oh, they just look like they're just ticking along nicely, but actually are they making the progress that they should be making for the age that they are? And actually, do they just need a bit more of this, or do they need a little bit more of that? Is there something we could adjust in terms of our interactions with them, or in terms of the environment, just to support them to, you know, develop in the best way that they can?
And what you've done there, just kind of talking that through, is you've reiterated the importance of that common language and common understanding as a base, that all the staff looking at that. But you also touched on, you've been to early years forums and perhaps talked about things. So by having this, by using the same tool, but also having gone through the same development processes with regards to the CPD, actually, again, there's that common language and that shared understanding. So what you're saying is developmentally appropriate for a summer born is the same as a school in the trust, in your trust, is saying for a child, but in a very different context, but developmentally, are they where they need to be? So again, there's that kind of parity picture kind of becomes evident as well. And, you know, I think that's really, really powerful, that it's shifting professional thinking as well as professional conversations. And that can only be a good thing, really, because it helps to be even more reflective on practice and provision, isn't it? And what we're talking about is strengthening and fine-tuning. It's not an overhaul or anything like that. So I think that's interesting. Anna, is there anything you want to add from a kind of a trust level in terms of the data and the picture that it's created in the conversations or planning that you've been able to kind of think about consequently?
Yeah, so I think that, again, just to sort of go back to that idea of, you know, the knowing the starting points for our children and being able to narrate and articulate not just the starting points, but where we, you know, that trajectory, where are they going? And recently we had an Ofsted inspection in one of our schools, and that was something that, again, was really powerful to be able to use that tool, because when we're talking about case sampling children, we were able to pinpoint those individual children and say, well, actually, we know where child A is, and actually developmentally they're at this point, and this is how it's informing our practice and provision. And that to me was a real strength that I felt that it gave to that narrative that we would have had before. But in terms of where are they and how are we tracking them in a meaningful way, that that made a massive difference. And I think as well, in terms of, you know, when we take a step back from this and we look at the impact that this approach to assessment and intelligent use of assessment is having, what it's also doing is it's helping us to understand that typicality of our schools. So the barriers that we might find on a cohort basis, or it might actually be that is typical of our community, of our school. So therefore, these are the decisions that we make around our pedagogy. These are the decisions that we make around our curriculum, because as we've talked about before, the idea of child development, it doesn't stop at early years. So if children have gaps in their development, if they have gaps in their characteristics of effective learning, there are going to be implications for Key Stage 1, for Key Stage 2. So how do we adapt? How do we respond through our teaching? And again, another one of those, you know, the things that we've looked at recently is responsive teaching. How are we using that information to respond appropriately through our teaching? So that, to me, it's really strengthened our understanding of our schools, the challenges, but also the decisions that we make. And that, you know, is something that we've explored in a couple of schools, and that's something that I want us to build on moving forward. So really strengthening that narrative that we have.
Yeah. I think it's powerful to hear you talk about that. And I know way back when these tools were being piloted, you know, even before they were brought to market, and there was a trust that we were working with, a large trust similar to yourselves, and similar conversations really about that, if you like, the ripple effect of looking at child development and of using the tools, the ripple effect more widely than just the child and the class, actually rippling through into that bigger picture, strategic thinking and strategic planning for further through the school, and that strategic thinking at different levels within the trust as well. And it's really interesting to hear that actually you don't know that other trust at all, but you've gone through a very similar process and are having similar conversations. And I think from an Ofsted point of view, obviously we were developing these tools well before the framework was changed and the toolkit came out, but we know the messaging now is around children's stage, not age. So actually the fact that you were able to have that strong conversation during that inspection in those case study children, in that case sampling, I think is kind of a really helpful kind of feather in your bow, as it were, or a tool in your toolkit to be able to engage in those conversations with confidence. And I really like your phrase, intelligent use of data, because that's what it's about. It's not just about the mark in the sand and this is where we got to. It's always about the so what next, where have they come from, what are we doing, where are the priorities, is that a child level, a group level, a class level, a cohort level, or is it a shift in something that we've got to do to be responsive to what our children in our context need. So it's just, you know, from my point of view, really, really nice to hear the kind of, as I say, the ripple effect, or how far reaching it has been to kind of support that thinking and professional conversation and strategy.
Absolutely. And I think that the work that we intend to do, as we've already mentioned, the work around a strong transition to year one. And again, those are conversations that we've all been having, but I also know that it comes within the Ofsted framework. And what's reassuring for me is that I've always been a bit of a quiet rebel. So I don't do things for the sake of doing it, and I don't do it for Ofsted, and I won't. So actually what was really reassuring was that we've really invested in this. It really matters to us, and it matters to the work that we do with our children. So to be able to almost have the courage of our convictions, yep, and be able to really stick by this and say, actually, I can articulate this now perhaps in the past, we would have said, you know, our children need more development on speech and language. Would they need more support before we get them to write? But actually now we've got a really tangible set of data that actually gives us that strength and that courage to say, hang on a minute, this is what we're doing and this is why. So I feel that the work that we intend to do very soon around year one and around those children who perhaps haven't met GLD, because it's not about trying to get as many children as possible, forcing it through to reach that, you know, expectation around, I think, is it 75% for 2028? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That feels like if we were to focus all our attention on just GLD, how are we supporting our children to develop? So actually, to me, it's about investing in the children, where they are, can we articulate it, and can we support that transition into year one and then into year two so that everybody understands how those children learn and what they need. Mm-hmm. So I think
and what their journey of development has been like as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because every child is different. Every child, and I think sometimes we forget that. We forget when we are looking at data and we are looking at outcomes and we use these catch-all phrases that every child is unique and they need something different. So I feel like the work that we've done on intelligent use of assessment, that's really strengthened it massively. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And like I say, it's just a pleasure to kind of hear. Obviously, we've worked in partnership in parts and you've done some things kind of as a for your trust, that strategy, and then individual schools have also worked on things. And it's really interesting to hear how it's all kind of moving through. And I think in terms of that transition, you may or may not have noticed earlier on, I was very careful with my wording around how the beyond baseline, the mid-year assessment, helping us to really help the children to be as well placed as possible by the end of the reception year. What I didn't say was hit GLD. And for some of those children, it will be to hit GLD. But for some of those children, actually, it's about making sure their prime areas, because they are time sensitive and so important for onward success, that the prime areas are as strong as possible. Because if they are, that will mean that they are well placed for their onward journey, that they will get to the reading and the writing and the maths. And it's not that we don't focus on and talk about and teach and deliver reading, writing and maths, we do, but it's about what's going to help them be as well placed as possible, because it's underpinned in that really clear understanding of child development. And I really like what you're saying as well around that strength and conviction of what you're talking about, because to loop back to something you said earlier, Anna, about your school leaders and heads and such like kind of having more confidence, of course, from an inspection point of view, for EYFS to get a strong outcome, head teachers, and it explicitly says head teachers need to understand the early years and such like, be knowledgeable about the early years, I think is the phrase. And actually what you're talking about is an element of that, you know, that the head teachers are able to talk about the narrative, the context for learning, the why of the pedagogical approach, the why for these children. But outside of inspection, actually, it means that the leaders are also in a stronger position to engage constructively with their early years colleagues about children, particularly during pupil progress meetings and such like, because what you've done, it sounds like, and what the tool is supposed to do is to reframe some of the conversations around learning and progress and what that means, so that everybody again is having more informed discussions. And again, I can see Sally nodding again at that point. All good. So I think it will be fair to say that over the last 12 months, it's been a substantial journey, and there has absolutely been time and space, but equally it's still been quite rapid in terms of actually putting that CPD in place, implementing and investing in the tools, rolling those things out. And it sounds like it's made a difference in terms of for the children, because you feel that you're better meeting those needs and moving them forward, but also for the staff in terms of their knowledge and understanding and that professional engagement at, you know, various roles within the school, within the team, the school, and across your trust, I think it would be fair to say. So is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. She says with conviction. So I guess in terms of, I just want to come back to Sally, really, just for kind of final thoughts, really, because you are, you know, an example of somebody on the ground who's taken on, you know, all of this training, but a new assessment process that happens at different points through the year. So it's not about termy data drops and those sorts of things. It's a shift away from that. So, you know, how's it been in terms of manageability and usability and all of those sorts of things? How have you found it doing it?
I think because everybody understood why we were doing it. So yeah, like I said, that intelligent use of assessment, I think you've got everybody's buy-in from the beginning. I think that we've had that strong training from you, and then that was really easy to take back to school and share with staff and share with the team, so that everybody was on board to be able to utilise it to the best that they could. So in terms of usability, it's been a really easy tool to be able to pick up and use for the team to be able to use when they've been observing and interacting with children, for them to add their thoughts to us. So it really has been a collaborative process with the team, and that was the same at the baseline, and the same at the midway point in the year when we did our next kind of data drop, for want of a better word. And I think what it's not been is onerous, because it's really given us valuable insight and information into what we need to do and what we need to provide for our children, for them to, you know, reach their full potential for the age and stage that they're at. So I don't feel as though it's added to the workload. I feel like what it's given is clarity to staff when they've been planning, when they're thinking about the next steps for children, you know, thinking about what enhancements are going out in the curriculum. We've had a real drive on staff interactions this year. That's been one of our kind of underlying pieces of work that we've been doing in school, because we had a couple of new members of staff new to the team this year who'd not been in early years before. So again, I think it's been really, really useful for them to be involved in this, for them to understand children's developmental journey, for them to be a part of this assessment process and be part of feeding in and making those decisions about what the next steps are for our individual children.
Yeah, Liam. No, and again, it's good to hear, because, you know, we developed this tool, and yes, we did pilot it rigorously. But it's always good to hear when it's out there and being used by real schools with real children in real time, with all of the very, very many barriers and challenges that we know are facing schools and the education system right now. And it's really, you know, it's really pleasing to hear that actually it's been of benefit and not Definitely. Something else to do. And I think, because that's really important to us, we want to make a difference for the children. And we want to be able to support our Early Excellence family, you know, all of you that are engaging with us. We want to be able to support you to, you know, help your children. And it's really pleasing to hear that actually it's done what we had hoped it would do in at various levels. So yeah, that's great to hear.
As well, it's really helped to shape our conversations at things like pupil progress meetings and things like that. It's given us a real focus. And we've actually, because it is so all-encompassing in terms of the characteristics of effective learning and well-being and things like that, we've kind of, it's allowed us to use it wider with other members of staff, like our Senko and our DSL. So when we're talking about the whole child, we've almost turned it into some sort of supervision / SEM meeting as well, outside of, you know, so we can really make sure that early identification of needs there as well. And we're really identifying, as we mentioned at the beginning, whether the gaps that these children have are developmental gaps or whether they're something else that's underlying. So making sure that we're getting people involved at the right time, you know, as early as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, that's just another really lovely example of what I keep calling the ripple effect of the tool. It's not just, it does one thing, actually it kind of builds. So there's plenty of kind of potential for use in it, I think, in terms of what you're saying. So Anna, is there anything else that you would like to kind of add just before we kind of draw things to a close?
Yeah, I think we feel that we're in a much stronger position collectively of our 15 schools. We've got this shared understanding now. So as we look to where we go next, it's almost looking at moderation, looking at sense checking our assessments, our judgments, having those conversations. And that's something that we've got our Early Years Leaders Forum coming up. We're going to be doing that together. But then if we're looking ahead to next year, weaving that through so that we're really, really confident in terms of our judgments. And I think that as well, then it's about that, as you said, that ripple effect then into maths leaders forums, English leaders forums. How is that informing our pedagogy? And making sure that, again, we really understand how children learn and how to identify where there might be some of those gaps. And then I think the big thing that's on the horizon is the curriculum and assessment review. And that's something that I think I keep mentioning. I don't think I go a day without mentioning it. And I think that, again, rather than us jumping to, okay, what's curriculum content? What are we going to have to cover in our curriculum? Because we can't make any of those decisions. The programmes of study are yet to be published, and that won't happen until next year. Actually, what we're doing is ensuring that we've got a really strong understanding of pedagogy. And really, pedagogy teaching is informed by how children learn. So we're working on that as part of our phase one, and then we can then build on that. But also, I think building that real strength of our understanding from the transition from early years to year one into the national curriculum, because it's not as obvious as it could be. So for me, this has given us really, really strong starting point, not just in our schools and for our children, but for us as a trust. And I feel like I've got clearer direction in terms of my role and how I can best support our schools, which is ultimately, you know, the role of a central team. So I think, hugely, huge ripples, waves, the wave effect that is had.
That's good. No, that's really good. And I'm delighted, as I say, it's been great to speak to both of you and hear things from different perspectives, but also to hear very much how it's become a kind of a trust-wide project, but the strategy behind that, as well as the kind of the nuts and bolts of how that looked and actually what it's achieved for your children. And I'm delighted that, you know, Early Excellence have been able to obviously engage with you at points through, but that you found something that we've developed so powerful and so useful at it. As I say, at a child level, teacher level, and all the way through to kind of a trust level. So thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your journey. It's been lovely to speak to you, and I wish you lots of success with your onward plans of development. And I'm sure that we will be in touch, and obviously I shall see you soon for the next training session that we've got together. So thank you so much, and I shall see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on, or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today, or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email, sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.